Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hey, Ben.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And, of course, Mr. Chris Casso.
Hello.
How is everybody this fine evening?
Doing all right.
A little punchy.
We are definitely punchy here at Comics Dungeon.
I'm not a napper. I haven't been a napper since I was in college, when I could actually have headspace to nap. But I was bad sleep week for me, probably 4 or 5 hours each night just because of my sleep issues. I went home tonight right after work. I fell asleep on the couch, yo.
Ooh, I'm glad you made it.
So yeah. I do have a really anal internal time clock. I don't even use my alarm clock anymore, because I will wake up at 7 a.m. whether I have slept or not. I wake up.
That's a drag.
Yeah, but I quit using my alarm clock because it was actually so uncomfortable to be jerked out of any sleeping state, because the truth is I will jerk myself out of it, which is even more sad. Anyway, that didn't come out right at all, did it?
Kidding.
Wait,
what is happening?
Okay, hold on.
Can I just say that this yank. John Wick has yank. A toe... What is that called? Toe flex?
Toe flex? Sorry.
Ooh,
we've had John Wick here for 3 weeks now.
as a preview, it's going to be my quiz time. It's the Keanu time.
Nice.
But
Keanu figure time. Just has great articulation. I'm very impressed. You don't get that toe flex very often.
It's
in a
real life articulation.
It's real.
Because Keanu's quite flexible.
It's real to life. And the new Johnny Silverhand in the upcoming
video game.
Whereas
Nicole has experienced a new height in punchiness about this point. So.
Yeah, it's all gone, guys.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Right. She's on less than vapors. She's on something entirely a different dimension of vapors.
Molecules.
Yeah.
So. Well, as this is...
transcended?
As this episode is being dropped, we are deep in post-production of the latest Panel Jumper episode called...
Say It Loud.
Say It Loud, that Cole co-wrote with our friend Andrew Lee Creech. It's going to premiere at the Panel Jumper Live on Friday, September 27th at 8 o'clock at its usual home of West of Lennon in the beautiful Fremont neighborhood.
That's
just
right.
Down the street from where we are now.
Ticket link is set up. If you frequent our Panel Jumper Facebook page, I have it pinned to the top. Tickets are selling.
Yeah, we sold four today. I was so excited.
Well, that was actually 3 weeks ago, Ben.
Well, today in real time. Anyway, you can also
tickets
go to the panel.
Selling.
You
yes.
can go to the panel.jumper.com.
We're slowly at four. Please come in.
Sorry. Well, see, here's the thing. The ticket link just got set up less than a week ago, and we get
4 weeks ago.
We get the email every day from Brown Paper Tickets, and so for the last 3 days, it's been zero.
It's kind of depressing. It
happens every year. We already know this.
Yeah.
The show is going to sell well. We're going to be fine, but for those first few days, it's like zero people are coming to your show.
Right.
And we'll are we going to talk about it next week?
Yeah, let's go in depth next week. But
talk
for right
guests. I am honestly, folks, I am super excited about... everything we're going to be doing at the show. We've made a concerted effort to explore more diversity in artists and our storytelling and representation. And it's this show is evolving. The live show and the web series are becoming what I've always wanted it to be, which is a more inclusive opportunity for people in our community to tell stories with us. And I'm really proud of what we've done so far. Ben is right now slaving over editing, but we still have some stuff left to shoot.
You look like a deer in headlights right now.
Well,
are you okay?
Because
what I'm gonna say.
I am deep in post-production because, it takes a lot of time to put one of these episodes together. And and anyway, so tune into the panel.jumper.com, buy tickets to that. And within a couple weeks after the show, the live podcast with our industry guest, Jeffrey Verragay, will be on this here show, and also at the paneldrummer.com, you'll be able to also see issue 009, Say It Loud, the latest episode. But let's get on to talking about what we're going to talk about today, friends, and that's the House of X and the Powers of X, Hoxpox, as we like to call it.
Hoxpox.
We thought it'd be a good idea a while ago to have a little roundtable about what these books are and why they are what they are. Mm-hmm. What are they?
Everybody looks to me.
Aside from the obvious.
Well, it doesn't have to be you, Chris, if you don't want
it. No, it's fine. It's the new Marvel relaunch of the X-Men, because relaunching, it's going to be... I'm having
that
a seizure.
Perfect.
Because of the relaunch.
But if there was a core... if there was a core title series that
needed it
and has never actually experienced it, not ever, not really, it was the X-Men.
Debatable across the table.
Well, they went away for
not
a while.
Not a hard reboot.
Not a hard reboot. But I mean, we don't know if that's what it is yet.
Yes, you're right.
Have you seen all those timelines in the back of the issue?
Oh, my goodness.
So here's a quick question. Yeah. How far are you, sir?
I've read the first two weeks.
Okay, yeah. So I just want to spoil things.
Oh, snap. Okay.
Yeah. So, but you know about Moira.
I really want to talk about Moira, but I'm afraid if we talk about Moira, we're going to ruin it for people who haven't read it yet.
It's been long enough. But we won't get there just yet. So we'll just do a quick thing. So the X-Men have been crap for sales for 10 years plus, not since Joss Whedon's run. And
that was a blip.
Yeah. And partially because of the problem with the Fox properties and all that stuff. So now that the mouse has absorbed, like the Borg, the Fox properties back into it, where they can finally unleash and try harder and make it count. But first, we had to wait for them to... First, they killed Jean, then they didn't kill Jean, then they killed Scott, then they didn't kill Scott, then they killed Wolverine, but Deadman, Old Man Logan's around, and now he's not. So finally, we just had to wait till everybody was alive and well again.
I was really hoping after the Secret Wars that something new and cool was going to happen with X-Men, and they did relaunch the titles with the gold and the blue teams, and I picked up I think I picked up Gold number one. I reviewed it like a year, two, year and a half ago. And I was like, this is atrociously boring.
Yep.
This is everything I was afraid it was going to be.
It's something to note that the Secret Wars you're talking about was a whole Hickman jam that he did with Avengers for many years, ending in Secret Wars.
Yes.
So he built all of that stuff up, and people sort of kind of maybe played with it, but not really.
Then they dropped the ball continuously.
Yes. Yeah.
But here's the thing that's worth noting, at least in my own opinion, that it's not worth doing an X-Men relaunch unless you have Scott, Jean, and Logan. If you don't, why bother? And none of the ones we've had recently had either and any of them, because they were your state of death or whatever. So now it's time to do it again, and they finally got a writer who isn't necessarily one of the biggest names of the industry, but is definitely a name with a lot of trust. A lot of people follow his work in the East of West, and they enjoyed his Fantastic Four run and the Avengers runs and all that.
Well, he's an architect.
Yes. And so basically the X-Men needed some sort of reboot, something to just make it not as a horrible mess as it's been.
Yeah.
And so this is it. And it is a success as far as sales are considered, because they are going to the third and fourth printing of the first couple issues already. And we sell out of all of our issues within the first half hour of opening the store consistently. There's other factors involved with that about the local market, but they still would be selling that well no matter what. I could have probably easily sold an extra 50 to 100 copies of every issue within the first few days of their arrival.
Are you just turning people away?
Basically.
Wow.
I also have to put limiters. I have to say you can't buy more than one copy.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of speculators that are jumping on a lot of our other books as well. So right now it's the summer event season. There's a Spider-Man event. There's this event. There's two or three DC events. So people are also a little event crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth mentioning that this is selling so well, being a $5 and $6 book as well.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you saying that to me. I said, well, I'm going to sign up because I'm hopeful because it's Hickman. And you said, it's going to be a $6 book and there's going to be six each. And this is from the guy that runs the store.
I got to let people know what they're getting into, man.
I've been telling people at my store, but then also saying, like, you're going to get your money's worth in those first two $6 issues because there's a lot of reading. There's
so
a lot to it.
What Hickman does... What he did a little bit with the Fantastic Four, but particularly with this, is that he I'm going to harp on this concept of him being an architect, and why I'm excited about this is that is it a hard reboot or is it just redesigning the whole infrastructure of the X-Men books. To me, that's kind of one and the same, because there's a lot of timey-wimey things happening.
Mm-hmm. Some timey-wimey.
There's a lot of timey-wimey, and we have, and remember, Hickman is a graphic designer as well, and he does these cool graphic signature things on his covers and his credit pages and
hidden notes.
And that just is another level of genius with this guy that just boggles my brain. Mm-hmm. Because if you read any of his other books from like Black Wednesday Murders.
Black Monday.
I always say
But I like Wednesday.
Yeah, Black Monday Murders.
That's how I feel on Wednesday.
and the little triangle things in East of West.
Yeah.
But he also creates his own language. His language is for the books. And he's done that with this too.
And he creates mystery, which is one of the major factors that I think this is doing so well. Because first three pages are like, what are you doing with this tree thing? So it's worth noting the MVP of the title is Krakoa, the living island.
Yes.
So we're entering mini spoilers now. So reader, okay, if you so haven't,
reader beware.
At what issue are we spoiling? From what issue?
The second issue of each title.
Okay.
Just to define it, it's 2 6-issue series that are sister titles that alternate. Kind of alternate.
Mostly.
It's essentially a 12-issue maxi series that comes out weekly.
Gotcha.
So we're on issue 4, if you look at it that way. So Krakoa is a living island that first appeared in Giant Size X-Men number... Yep,
Giant Size X-Men number 1. That's my holy grail, by the by. I do not own that. I own everything else but that of the all-new Uncanny.
And the last time I remember seeing Krakoa, he was the front lawn of the school during the Jason Aaron run. So they had basically come to terms with Krakoa and said, hey, you're lonely, aren't you? Come be our lawn. Mm-hmm. And he would be the first line of defense for them as well.
Right.
So in this series, Professor X has cut a deal with Krakoa or something, and it is now a new nation for mutants.
Well, he's family. He used to be an enemy. He was an island that was trapping mutants and absorbing their energy. I kind of got the impression that in the later stories, this was a progeny of, or perhaps a budded persona from the original evil island.
But
I got the impression that, like, what were those? Were those the all-new... X-Men stories where he was the front lawn. I thought he was family.
That was Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
it's kind of like Starro or MODOK. There's billions of versions of them. Sure. Just say Starro. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah.
Doesn't matter which one is a spawn of.
But the cool concept is that, they took this idea and, Hickman took this idea and turned it on its ear. And it makes total sense that now they live in Krakoa in this, in this new space.
Utopia.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And Krakoa makes flowers that can create medicines for humans and mutants. Mm-hmm. And Chuck is going to nation saying, like, hey, you want this thing that extends your lives? Recognize us as a nation. Mm-hmm. And then there's some background stuff happening. Magneto's in there with him. Mm-hmm. All mutants are granted amnesty, even if they're murderers like Sabretooth. But the real interesting stuff starts to happen in Powers of X, where they set up multiple time frames and you're jumping to, the start, which is, young Professor X, then there's House of X time. And then there's, 100 years in the future?
Yep.
Or yeah. Mm-hmm. And, there's a war against the Sentinels and Nimrod is back. And then there's a further one that's like 1,000 years in the future and like civilization's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And, they start building some kind of back and forth mysteries with that. And then the big issue that everybody went crazy about online was House of X number 2, which is about Moira Mtargat, one of the oldest characters to, the X-Men lore. And they established that this entire time she's been a mutant, and her mutant power is that she lives her life, dies, and her consciousness resurrects and starts time over again.
Mm-hmm.
But she maintains her memories from the previous life. Mm-hmm. So subtly she's redoing history each time, changing the history of the world.
So it's like Groundhog Day, but with her entire lifetime.
Yep.
So she knows that she can see Oh, and then she has that wonderful scene with Destiny from the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
Yeah.
And remember, Destiny was the lover of Raven Darkholm Mystique. And Destiny, of course, can see the future. And this is probably the best time I've ever seen that Destiny character utilized, because she peeped into Moira's mind, saw Moira's ability, saw her past lives, and also saw the future, and gave her a warning, said, you need to make the right choices or this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's this layer upon layer upon layer of this storytelling that was just such high concept. It's like Frank Herbert Dune stuff to me. It was just like, wow, my mind is quite blown. Keep going.
And Destiny tells her that you don't have infinite lives.
Yep. Right.
That's, you got a small number. So here's a trick that tricks people. Did y'all know? So infographics, they're all over the place.
Yeah. And these are info dumps as well.
Info dumps. And it's, I love it because it's the best way to do, what do you call it when a character gives the full information dump. There's a
exposition.
It's exposition. So instead of Magneto being like, hey, did you know about this? You just have this page. But there's a special one in number two that's the many lives of Moira, and it goes for three pages. Did you all notice there's a missing life?
No, I didn't look that closely at it.
In the graph, it counts, there's 10 lives, but you don't see life six. It's not recorded anywhere in here. Mm. And then also in issue number two, it shows you that the House of X timeline that you're reading, it goes into the release date schedule and it tells you next issue. But the other timeline doesn't end, and it's the Apocalypse timeline.
And then that proceeds into the next issue.
We'll talk about it. Yeah, I don't want to ruin nothing for that boy.
And then,
over there.
And then you get the graph at the end, and then it's like furthering the timeline. So it's like it's happening in real time as you're reading the comic, which is really cool.
And I thought that the two series were going to be their own. The initial impression I got was that they were their own stories, but they actually are weaving together
very
as
much.
You go.
Yep. Very much.
So the infographics are a godsend because I would get lost and frustrated very quickly if we're not.
Every once in a while, I get a customer who's like, I just want House of X. I'm like, do you really? Because you don't.
No, you don't.
You need them both.
No, they dovetail. No. Because, and then with the timelines that are happening, but also with the jumps in narrative when you're, you know, and it says, it'll say year 100, then year 1000. And since I have been reading the X-Men since the 80s, they are referencing things that I remember, so I'm being rewarded. But at the same time, you know, I don't think it'll turn people off who are not familiar with the X-Men.
Like me?
Well, how do you feel about it? Because I remember the first when the first two came out, I remember you saying that, was it House of X was fun, but Powers of X felt like homework?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Powers of 10.
Powers of 10.
Oh,
you know what? I'm not going to play that game. That's just baloney.
Mr. Hornaday.
I'm just going to... That's baloney.
I guess I guess I have four questions now.
Yes.
Is it 10?
Yeah.
Power of 10.
Power of 10.
Because the time jumps are by power of 10.
Okay. Ho 10, yeah. Po 10.
They're by the power of 10.
Yeah. You've mentioned, Nicole, on previous episodes that you were never a fan of the X-Men. Is this...
I think I've made myself clear, yes.
Yes. Are you enjoying this?
Yeah.
Aside from it feeling like homework.
So I've gotten caught up and getting those first two issues, I think, need to be what they are to get you the foundation you need to continue going forward.
Yes.
I think the only thing is when I'm not familiar with a property, I'm going to miss that much more. You know, like I've reviewed stuff before where I'm like, there's a splash page here that looks really important. I don't know what it means.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there's characters that show up and things that happen that I'm just like, I feel like if I was an X fan, I would be like, ah, look, it's that guy. Or look, that's it. Like, I don't know who Destiny is. But I got who she was, you know, generally. Like, there's enough there that I can hold on to it. But there's no... That extra level, that extra depth that you get rewarded for, I miss out on, and I know I'm missing out on it.
That was my third question, was could someone jump in cold?
But
Nicole said, you're not going to get that extra level of, hey, there's that guy.
I think you might have to work a little harder for it, and it also just depends on how much you are able to retain and perceive from comic books. Like, if it's a Chris, you'll be fine because Chris is able to catch a lot of things. If you're a Nicole and you're like, ooh, oh my God, there's something shiny. Wait, was I reading a comic? Wait, where am I? Who am I? Do I have to work today?
Right.
Then you might miss some stuff.
Okay.
But I think overall, I don't think a brand new reader could jump into this, but I think that if you're a comic booky enough person, if you're adjacent enough to it.
See, my question is, if you like epic stories, let's say, you know, people who dug reading the Game of Thrones novels that are so dense, the world here is already built, but he's restructuring it. And I'm wondering if people who like big epic stories who may not be familiar with the X-Men would actually really have a good time with this.
I think as long as you're willing to ride the ride, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there are people who jumped into Gerard Way's Doom Patrol without ever reading Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol, which it is a love letter to.
And you need to.
And you need to. And they just rode the road.
Yep.
And they had a great time with it. So I think, it also just depends on where you're at.
Yeah. It is worth saying that it's brought in a lot of lapsed readers for us.
Absolutely.
So to give you an idea, for the past 5-6 years, our X-Men subscription numbers could barely breach past 20. Back in the Joss Whedon era, they were definitely in the high 80, 90, and I would be ordering like 125 copies, which is really good for one book. Saga has been the book to be near that, and it's dropped a bit. So right now, I've achieved like an additional 10 subscriptions every week of the release. I'm back up to almost 70 subscriptions now for two titles, you know, so that's really great numbers for us.
So we've mentioned that X-Men as a franchise, as you just said, dropped off. Is it too early to say this is revitalizing the X-Men as a property?
Breathe in and go.
You first, sir.
For me, yes, I'm really excited about it. But you know what? The main thing is, this isn't a superhero comic book anymore. I mean, they played with adventure stories, you know, but this is so far from the original Kirby Lee concept of like these super beings protecting a world that hates them. Now this is about a race and a culture trying to survive and winning.
Yeah.
Now they're winning. It's quite clear they are winning.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even not even describe this as a superhero comic book anymore. This is a science fiction epic that he's developing. And my concern is, when he's done doing this, what are the books going to look like? Because you can't go back to telling superhero stories with the X-Men characters when this is going to be done.
So I was going to say, this is a 12-issue maxi series, and I think you can, actually.
Really?
Because as you keep reading, there's the whole question of, like, is House of X actually the timeline we know, or is it a separate one that is going to infer Morris' decision in the one we know? So it'll leave us with a whole new slate. They're calling it the Dawn of X. That's when I think we'll find out if...
See, Hawks, Box, and Docs.
Hawks, Box, Docs.
That's Toten, when Poten, Doten.
No, I see that. No, that does not trip on the tongue at all. Yeah. Keep going, buddy.
That's when we'll know if it's a success, because will the people stick around?
Right.
And will they stick for an ongoing title?
Right.
In the relaunch, it's going to feature Hickman on the core X-Men title, which is basically just going to be called Summertime, because it's all Summer Family members. Have you noticed that? It's the Summer Family plus Wolverine, because it features Cyclops, Jean, Havoc, Sexy Dad, and Cable, and Hope.
Rachel?
Nope, she's there too, I think. And then New Mutants will get a relaunch by Hickman. He'll be the writer. And then the Marauders will get a book. And then Fallen Angels,
yes.
Excalibur, co-starring Apocalypse, and something else I'm forgetting. So they're an interesting lineup, but they're not all written by Hickman. So some of those ain't going to do so well.
Right.
So, I mean, it's interesting. We'll see where they can go from there.
Yeah.
I'm going to be really choosy when this is done, because I'm not going to get caught up in that again.
Yeah.
I know that's the game. That's the strategy for publishers with this kind of reboot. And I'm excited about this. But I am once burned 5 times shy with regards to this. So I will probably, and I was looking at the previews of the new titles, and I'm like, that just looks like, you know, you just kind of reinventing that particular wheel, and it doesn't have spokes. Mm-hmm. But I could be wrong. I welcome disappointment.
There you go. Okay. Any final things to say before we move on?
Interesting sub factor is that so because it's Marvel, every issue has a ton of variants, and we get a ton of them, mm-hmm. and that includes $10 variants and $50 variants and $100 variants. I'm selling through them $10 ones like candy. Because mm-hmm. once we sell out the normal ones, people are just like, I need it. I don't care how expensive this is. Yep. I've been selling the $100 ones like crazy, too.
Wow.
Yay. So finally, Marvel is doing what it needs to do for retailers at the moment.
Okay.
Excellent. Good for Marvel. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that you can't hardly keep them in a store. People come in, you have to limit them. House of 10 and Powers of 10 are part of a speculator boom right now that's happening. Talk a little bit about that.
So, because the summer events and number ones and all this stuff, a lot of people are going crazy for that. But we're getting other interesting bits happening. Like, for example, we had a guest in the store and his new book, Dead End Kids, and small publisher. It's a book that normally I wouldn't have ordered too many of if he didn't reach out to us. And the day of it finally arriving, it was already going for $30 on eBay and was well out of print. There's a couple other books like that happening. A new book from Boom called Once and Future by Kieran Gillen. Mm-hmm. And it's already at its fourth printing. And the third printing went out so fast that the day it was available to order, when I ordered it, the system did something I never said and said, we're automatically filling you with fourth printing. Sorry. So people are going crazy, and the speculators are grabbing extra copies and selling these and just gobbling them up.
Books that are getting like astounding reviews? Is there some weird internet word of mouth that's happening?
It's word of mouth amongst the speculator community. And so Nicole and I are fighting a frontline battle constantly where I'm putting notes on my shelf saying limit one per person, limit two per person. And I got to make sure the employees know, like, seriously, please do not let anybody abuse this, because I want regular readers to have a chance to buy something.
Sure.
Because a lot of these books are beginning to just disappear within the first half hour of opening mm-hmm. on a Wednesday. Not many people can come in that early on 11 a.m. on a Wednesday. So it's a problem, because yay, these things are selling, but it's probably going to create another bubble. Mm-hmm. And it's also making it impossible for us to figure out what's going to do it.
Yeah. And like, once you get a number one, does number two matter? Sometimes, but sometimes it doesn't.
Because that book that was super popular, The Dead End Kids, we sold through all of our copies. We sold the copies he brought in. So we sold more than, I want to say, 30 plus copies, which is, you know, really good for a new book that just came out. It's like $4 book, I think.
I think so.
Number two, though, not a single subscriber. Nobody wanted to commit to number two. So it's like, how do I deal with that? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know? That's really mysterious to me, because when I went and looked on eBay, you're right, they're going for $30 a print.
Yeah.
A pop, first prints. And
there's one CGC 9.8 first print that's $140.
And how recently? That's ridiculous. How recently did this book come out?
Dead End Kids is like 2 weeks old now.
Something like that.
And is the creator, and you had him in the store.
Yeah, we had him at both stores.
And did he have first prints with him when he came to the store?
Yeah. Yep, he still had his copies.
Well, there was an interesting thing that happened with Dead End Kids, because he scheduled his signing for the week of release, but Diamond had actually pushed back that date, so it was going to come out like a week or two later. So he had brought his copies. That's pretty much what he sold at the signings.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had our copies coming in after. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
I sold through all of mine.
Really interesting to me.
Yeah,
because he's not a known property.
Not that we were ever aware of to begin with,
and
you know?
I have not heard boo about reviews or anything. So
I saw some good reviews. You know, it's still not necessarily a book that would have popped up on my radar, though.
Right.
Our guest from a couple weeks back, Alex Bankita, has this new book. I ordered high on that. It came in a week earlier than it's supposed to. I had to put a limiter on that so that we could actually have copies to sell during his signing. So we'll see.
We've seen a decline of other comic book shops in Seattle.
That's a factor for us.
And so now you're getting more influx of those customers from those other stores. That's shaping the situation.
But Nicole's seeing a lot of speculator movement, and those factors that you're mentioning wouldn't affect her the same way.
Well, she's a little bit. They may, because I've actually had some East Side closures as well.
Okay.
But those people are still, the people who are hitting my stock are people who have been patrons.
Gotcha.
So
yeah, so that's another factor.
Yeah, so it just depends.
So the other thing I brought up before we got on mic was, is the recession impacting people's psyche? Are people going, oh, I need to buy something that I can resell in a couple months when things get, when I'm out of pocket cash? I've never really experienced that mentality because I've always sold things on eBay to make ends meet and help me get my own goodies for myself. So, but it's so, I'm looking at eBay for the dead end kids and it's like, this is wild because he's an unknown creator and there's, I don't know where the word of mouth is coming from.
Bleeding Cool News has a factor in some of this to because I noticed they had some sort of counter that was letting people know about these things. But there's that indie side of it. Now let's talk about the pure speculator superhero side. Captain Marvel number 8 came out, and in it there's one panel where she starts to bleed from her nose, so everybody's like, they're gonna give her cancer like they did the last Captain Marvel. So like that disappeared in like half a nanosecond at the store. And then this week in Batman, Alfred dies, maybe
he's doing air quotes.
Yes. it's Clayface. So that one disappeared off the shelf. And those are things I can't prepare for, period.
Right. Yeah.
Because who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
Every once in a while, Marvel will be cute and be like, hey, retailers, you really wanted it? This is special. You need to do that. And it's just like, screw you.
Well,
you
because
say that about everything.
Because yeah, exactly. Sometimes it's not true.
Yeah,
it's not true when they say that.
90%.
I've seen some of the PR blurbs that
it's
Marvel
hyperbole.
Puts out.
Yeah.
So that's that kind of stuff happening. There's no control over it, you know. So we're trying to get ahead of the game where we can take the risk. We took a pretty good risk on House of X, not big enough apparently.
Yeah, and then we've just been trying to catch up. Like we've been trying to bump all our future numbers up to try to meet demand.
And I'm trying to figure out the risk for Legion of Superheroes, which was another talk point we wanted to get to because the return of the Legion of Superheroes is happening and it starts to happen in Superman number 14 and Supergirl
33,
whatever.
Yeah.
And both of those, we got notice, all retailers received notices from Diamond and DC saying, we made a boo-boo, please destroy old copies and don't let them on the general market. And, of course, retailers didn't listen to that, and they're selling for $30+ online.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said another message saying, really, please destroy these. We'll give you $5 credit if you do it. And it's just like, well, that's not going to work.
No, because
they're going for $30 and $40 online right now.
Yeah, I had people calling me. I had people trying to bargain with me to give give those comics to
them. I had
a
handful of customers be like, yeah, and grab me that. And I'm like, No, they're like, yeah, can you grab me those numbers? I'm like, oh, they're not coming in this week because we have to destroy them. And they're like, oh, I know that. Grab me those. And I'm like, well, you're being presumptuous.
Yes, exactly.
No.
Yes.
Out of spite? No. Not even out of any
for
moral
me,
ethical
like,
positive.
I'm like, ethics. Chris is like, spite.
I've never seen you in the store before, so you're not getting this.
I know, these are people I know.
Yes.
So that's a thing. So now I have to figure out, will the actual Legion issue, the Legion relaunch, do a thing or not?
Mm. I don't know. I mean,
And this is Brian Michael Bendis doing it. Da da da. So that's the trick. It's all risk. There's no returns. We're gonna take some more risk here soon. This next upcoming week, which is 2 weeks in the past to you readers, one of our biggest risks is about to hit us, which is Marvel Comics number 1,000, and it's a $10 comic, and
prestige
it's
bound.
It's perfect bound.
It is perfect.
And it's a sink or swim kind of scenario. So we went with hopefully there's no sharks in the water, and we ordered like a boat ton of them.
Wow.
Yes,
and
we do.
I'm like,
and
why am I going for that analogy?
We
so
give
hard?
Free boat with each with each boat full purchase.
Yes.
need a bigger store.
It's gonna be an expensive risk. So we'll see how that does, and hopefully speculators will want some of it.
I mean, the risk that we really took the big leap on was Marvel did their weird Marvel thing where you could unlock certain variants by artists that are kind of hot
popular,
right now.
Yeah.
Like a J. Scott Campbell and stuff like that. So we took the leap to qualify those.
Which means that we took the risk to be allowed to spend more money on things we don't know we can sell.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's so weird. So please come buy Marvel Comics 1000. I will say that initially hurt my soul to order that high, and then I got to see an advanced copy of it, and it actually looks pretty decent.
Yeah. It's mostly it's guided by Al Ewing.
That is a good way to put it. It is guided by Al Ewing. In faith we have.
Every other page is by a different creator.
Yes, yes.
And it follows the entire timeline of Marvel as they reveal new mysteries to the universe.
Yeah, so it actually could be an interesting read. It could be good. I think it will be worth your money.
Yes.
But we will have a lot of them.
Yes. That one I will not put a limit sign on.
Please,
you can buy as many as you want.
As many as you want. Come to both stores, you know, maybe we got different stock. I don't know.
Final words on speculator, the weird speculator boom that's happening right now.
Why do you need three copies? You don't need three copies. Maybe two. I can let that go, but pre-order it.
The kicker is that you don't know that it's hot until right before it comes out.
Right.
And that's why speculators don't seem to pre-order, which kills me.
Because they don't know either.
Because nobody knows until it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And Cole Hornaday, let's start with you.
Well, sure.
Hox Pox is supposed to be Book Report, right?
That's what I thought.
No.
All right, well, Cole, let's have you talk about the book you have in front of you.
Am I the only one doing Book Report?
No, you won't be.
Okay. All right, so last Panel Jumper Live, our special industry guest was co-founder and co-director of the Short Run Comics and Cards Festival, Comics and Cartoon Festival, Comics and...
Short Run.
Yes, it's just Short Run. Kelly Fro, who was a really, really terrific guest. And I picked her brain about her forthcoming graphic novel that apparently she's been working on for quite some time, called Walking Uphill, a story of friendship, freedom, and grunge. And it's Kelly's little biographical piece about her coming with her friend. I think it's Missy, and they get on a train from the Midwest, from I believe it's Wisconsin, and they decide that they're going to go find a new life in the Pacific Northwest. And they go to Portland. I don't know if they didn't have a plan. and that's what's kind of I love about this story. Yes, it is Missy and Kelly. That's what I love about this story is that you know, the 90s was not particularly a time of great freedom or naivete. It nothing like that. And that's never true of anywhere. These two young women from the Midwest were free and open-hearted and had big dreams and really just threw all cares to the wind. And they lived in hostels and slept on people's floors. But they took the train. They took the terrain from the Midwest to Portland. And they eventually wound up in Seattle. And I believe that they were staying... they hit Portland in 1994. And then they were staying at a hostel that I think is still there down by Pike Place Market.
The Green Turtle?
Yeah, I think that's where they were staying.
If that is the one, that is still there.
Okay. And they were staying there. And Kelly, if I've gotten this wrong, please, course correct me.
Green Tortoise. Green Tortoise, that's the one.
It was one of those, and they said... We need to go. They said to the person at the desk, we need to find a place to live and get a job. Where's the best place to start? And apparently the person at the desk said, go out to this street, take a left, and walk uphill. And you'll find yourself in Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. And that's the best place to find inexpensive places to live, jobs that will pay you food. And
the 90s.
And it's the 90s. And it's a really sweet story. And Kelly's style is very light and cartoony. And at the same time, it packs a punch because she doesn't tell airy... floofy stories. There's some, you know, they run into drug addicts. They get some real slice of life stuff right in their faces. But the style sort of lessens the harshness of that blow, but also is a little bit deceptive because, you're still experiencing this person's real story. This is self-published. You can get it through Kelly's Etsy page. And it's, I think it's just Kelly Fro. Her last name is spelled F-R-O-H. I got this I got this through her, and she signed it and drew a little illustration for me, and it's really neat. I recommend it. I pestered her when she was on the live show, and I said, well, when I'd seen pages, and I said, I'm really excited about this book. I will promote the crap out of this book when it arrives. When's it going to arrive? Oh, I don't know. And lo and behold, you know,
it has arrived.
5 months later?
It's there. It's yeah, here. It's in your
here.
Hands.
It's here. It's in my hands. All right. And I highly recommend it.
Cool. Walking Uphill from Kelly Froh. Thank mm-hmm. you, Cole. And I'm the only one, only other one doing a book report today. Of course, the whole show was a book report.
I could talk about some smut.
Do well, it. You Well, do what you want. I will allow that. Okay, so I got to the store early, and I picked up a number one from IDW called Star Pig. Mm. It is a. I picked it up because of the title, and it starts off. There's a spaceship with a bunch of space cadets going through space, and they're heading to. And I really like this little detail. They're heading to Ferdowsi Station, and I don't know if you remember the. Curiosity rover landing, but there was an engineer at the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory. His name is Bo Back Ferdowsi, and he got a bit of fame briefly because he had a mohawk, and you don't often see jet propulsion engineers wearing mohawks. So it's a nice little call out to Bo Back in the very first page of this comic. But it's basically... yeah, it's like these space cadets, their spaceship gets hit by what appears to be an asteroid and blown up. And the one gal is thrown off into space. And before she is subsumed by space, she is subsumed by a tardigrade, a giant tardigrade, which if you don't know what they are, look them up. They're fascinating creatures.
Water bears.
Water bears. And in this case, it is a star pig. And it basically can communicate with her via like telegraphically. It's very sorry that her friends are dead. It doesn't really know. It's kind of it's still learning what humans are. But it was a science experiment gone awry, and it's heading towards Earth because it hears a lot of great things about Earth. And and then they meet.
We're going to disappoint him.
It's actually kind of cute, you know. It's a very innocent thing. And there's one picture of it just laying back on the rubble of the spaceship that was blown up. And he says, "No, I am a large, fleshy space pig," because she asks it, you know, "Do you have claws or tentacles or laser guns?" Because something is coming.
And she's doing all this communicating with it. From inside,
she's inside it. Yeah. And she's like, "Are you going to digest me?" And he's like, "I promise." Or it's like, "I promise, I won't digest you while you are inside me." and then they are met by what appears to be like an amoebic blob of a collector, and it's heading towards Earth too because it likes Earth and it likes it considers this young gal to be mint in box, and. But everything, it's not very, nothing's scary yet, aside from everybody dying, basically, in the first couple pages, except for this one gal. And, it was kind of a lot of fun. It's pretty quick, you know, it's over before the book is even over. I don't really read floppies all that often, but there's like, a third of the book is basically just ads and promos in the back. But I didn't say who it was by. It's written by Delilah Dawson, art by Francesco Gaston, colors by Sebastian Chang. Yeah, IDW, I thought it was a lot of fun. And of course, tardigrades, the tardigrades are actually in the news recently because we spilled some on the moon. Oops. But they're surviving. They're surviving because they can survive anywhere. So yeah, check out Star Pig, and it is promised to be. I don't know how long it's going to be. I'm assuming 6 to 12 issues from IDW. So yeah, check it out.
Did they chip each tardigrade that they spilled on the moon?
No,
they're so tiny.
Did you microchip your?
Did you microchip your tardigrade?
Yeah.
Can the owner of tardigrade C-141 come to the moon to pick it up?
Pick up your tardigrade.
All right. Do you have something to talk about? All right, Chris, what do you got?
So, manga. I saw this in the order form, and I'm like, well, I got to see what that's about. Mm-hmm. And it's Kaiju Girl Caramelise. Written and drawn by Spica Aoki. Pika Aoki, I think. Yes. And basically, it's a follows this young girl who's very shy and socially anxious, and the most popular boy in school starts talking to her, and when she gets excited, like all of a sudden, her arm becomes like this giant monster death arm, and basically, it's as she gets any kind of excited, she turns into a kaiju. There's a point where like he holds her hand, and she just like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, and then like she falls into the river, and then the freaking giant Godzilla monster shows up, and he's got hearts in his eyes, and and it makes eye contact with the young boy, and it just like gets blushy and disappears and runs away. So, and then the mother of the girl finds out, and she's just kind of like, oh dear, I knew this was gonna happen. And so you just gotta stay calm and not worry about it. So apparently maybe the mother got intimate with a Godzilla at some point.
Hey, I understand completely.
And what's great is there's another girl in the school who is a kaiju fan and wants to meet the new kaiju, and she's convinced that the Caramelese is like her I don't know, occultist or something. Mm-hmm. And so she keeps on trying to become friends with her, and like, we gotta, you hook me up with him, won't you? So that's about it. It's really great because in the back of the book, the creator is usually tends to draw and write things that are like girly fandomy stuff. And then like the editor wanted her to do a book for like a boys magazine, and she's like, oh, so do you want me to do it differently? And the editor's like, no, you do it the way you do your thing. So you just kind of get this weird like girly kaiju thing. It's great. So highly recommend Kaiju Girl Caramelese.
Recommend.
Okay, cool, thanks. And Nicole, do you got something?
Yeah, are you okay over there?
Yeah, it's weird. For some reason,
echoes.
I know, for some reason the sound is now coming out of the computer and not my headphones, but it's still recording, so
let's hey, keep let's going. Just keep rolling. So I participated in a Kickstarter. Steve Mannion. I actually don't know how to say his name, so I just say Mannion. It's much more fun that way. He every once in a while just goes back to his Fearless Dawn comics, which are just little cheesecakey things. Fearless Dawn is the protagonist, and she's in pretty much a bikini and like booty shorts, and she's got little bat wings on her head and like little I'm blanking, steampunk goggles. Anyway, she's cute, and she fights like cute lady Nazis and monsters, and she rides dinosaurs, and look, there's not much to her. She's very cute. I love her. I will give Steve my money every time. It's very pulpy. This one is shorts, so it is just short little comic books inside one issue.
And she's in shorts.
She's mm-hmm. in shorts. She's wearing shorts. They
Reminds
are short.
Me of Simon Bisley a little bit.
I like Simon Bisley's art a lot too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, every time I see a Fearless Dawn comic, I have to buy it. I don't always read the comics because, let's face it, I'm not in it for the stories. I'm in it for Fearless Dawn. And I said it was smut, but it's actually not. It's just cheesecake, you know. It's just sexy ladies. But it's, like, very cartoony. You know, everyone's got that kind of, oh, Betty Page face, ooh, mm-hmm. you know. And there's, like, weird anatomy and stuff like that. But it's a delightful weird anatomy. I think if you choose your weird anatomy and don't try to go, no, it's accurate, you know, then you're fine. So I don't know that he is selling this through his website, available through some channel. I didn't really research that much, but he just seeing if he, you know, throws another Kickstarter out there if you're curious in his artwork. I think a lot of his stuff is pretty much out of print at this point. Mm-hmm. I started collecting Fearless Dawn stuff about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I enjoy his stuff. And I pulled this out because I really haven't been reading much. And Fearless Dawn is always good. Yeah, tons of cool art prints and stuff like that, too. So I definitely, if he does a Kickstarter again, I'll definitely support him. I got all kinds of fun things, trading cards and stickers and
cool
swag.
All right. Fearless Don. Thank you very much, Nicole. And that is Bookport. That is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by the Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or however you get your shows at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And our friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time this week. The questions come to us from Mr. Chris Casso.
To celebrate the arrival of my new John Wick action figure, this quiz time is called Whoa, I'm in a Comic.
Nice.
Published in 1991, Marvel published... I was tired when I wrote this up. Marvel made a comic adaptation of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey to coincide with the movie. Utilizing the original script, which included many deleted scenes, the story portrayed Death as an archetypical skeletal figure. Due to the popularity of the comic, Marvel commissioned a spin-off series that lasted 12 issues. Hmm. What was the title of the 12-issue series, and who was the main creator behind him?
Was it Evan Dorkin?
It was Evan Dorkin.
And it was... it's Bill and Ted something. Bill and Ted's
most
excellent
comic
adventure.
Bill and Ted's excellent comic book is the title. Next question. Originally published on the official Matrix website from 1999 to 2003, these short stories taking place within the Matrix universe included tales by Neil Gaiman, Paul Chadwick, David Lapham, Dave Gibbons, Peter Bagg, and the Wachowskis themselves. What company brought these stories to print for the first time?
Wasn't it their imprint? Wasn't it the Witch? What was it? Wasn't the Wachowski? What was it called? Matrix Comics?
The Wachowski's own company, Burly Man Entertainment.
Burly Man, gosh darn it.
Yeah. Wow.
I did a lot of Keanu research, so quick side note. Did y'all ever realize that Keanu Reeves was the main heartthrob in Paula Abdul's music video, Rush Rush?
Oh, no.
I did not.
Now I'm
going to
go home and watch that.
Also, part of the video takes place at the Griffith Observatory, which is where the climax for the Rocketeer movie takes place.
Hey.
And parts of Transformers. Currently reprinted by IDW, this 1993 adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula was written by Roy Thomas and drawn by Mike Mignola. Mm-hmm. Keanu played Jonathan Harker, and critics were fairly harsh at the time. One reviewer said he was out of his depth and was frequently blasted off the screen by Gary Oldman, which gives me a great visual. While another said... it was a dreary, milky nothing, a black hole of sex and drama. But I digress. Who was the original publisher of this comic book adaptation?
Oh, that was Topps.
That's Topps.
Wow.
Who also did Jurassic Park and Mars Attacks.
That's right.
Released in 2005 and starring Keanu as the Hellblazer himself. I also forgot that Shia LaBeouf was in this movie.
That's right.
Constantine credited two comic creators as it borrowed heavily from their story arcs in the original comics. The credited creators are Jamie Delano and Garth Ennis. What are the names of the two story arcs that they borrowed heavily from? They're the names of trade paperbacks.
I know, I can't remember.
Okay. Dangerous Habits by Garth Ennis and Original Sins. And also, there was a John Wick comic book that I haven't read. The end.
All right. Well, great. Thank you, Chris. And thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.